The reading this morning is from Romans 8, verse 14 to 17, and you can find that in the Church Bible on page 1134. Romans 8, 14 to 17, page 1134. Because those who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God. For you did not receive a spirit that makes you a slave again to fear, but you received the Spirit of sonship. And by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God, and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. This is the word of the Lord.
Pulpit's not big enough for two people, so Rob and Jacqueline are going to share the lectern. Look, you could squeeze in if you like, but anyway.
Not me.
It's lovely to welcome Rob and Jacqueline to do a joint talk to us this morning. Bless you.
Okay, right. We are going to be talking about faith in families this morning. Now, this is such a broad topic, it was quite difficult to even know where to start, but it's been an interesting experience for us as a mum and dad and as a couple to think, what do we do that's different or distinctive in our family? Now, we're not going to give you a tick list of what to do to be Christians in families, not at all. There are probably some people who've got some very strong opinions on what you should or shouldn't do, but there are so many different ways of doing and being faith in the family. Now, I have to say that when we have actually worked it out and got it right, we'll probably be well into our 90s. We'll let you know. Now, I think it's probably best to start in a very broad way. Obviously, families come in all shapes and sizes, and even, I think, probably even more so these days, single people, couples, people who are parenting alone for whatever reason, grandparent families. Even more so in this century, I think grandparents have taken on a bigger role in the family. Obviously, going back to how things probably were a long, long time ago when grandparents were a lot nearer. And obviously not missing out the role of aunts and uncles. People who've suffered relationship breakdown, marriage breakdown, and the hurt and the pain that that causes and ripples through the wider family. Reconstituted family, there's a new one. That's when you perhaps have a mum with a child and a dad with a child or more than one child, and they start a new relationship together. So then you've got all those extra children as well. And that can be with grown-up children and then obviously with grandchildren as well. Families that are fosterers and adopters who take other children into their families. Step families, extended families, some families that live together, more and more of those. I keep seeing those on things like Grand Designs. They seem to be building bigger houses to accommodate more parts of their families. And then, of course, your regular, what we would used to call the 2.4 family, your mum, your dad, and your 2, 3, 4 children. Now, all of those pictures showed happy, smiley faces. But we have to remember that families don't always have gloriously wonderful times every day of the week, every month of the year. families that face difficult times, how is their faith in that time? Sometimes that's because they have financial worries. Sometimes they could be experiencing homelessness or possibility of having to move on again. I was with a mum on Friday afternoon who was expressing to me her concern about possibly having to move on because she was in a housing association accommodation, and her son has actually been showing some challenging behaviour and there's some police involvement. If that carries on, she may have to move home. Parenting children with additional needs. Obviously, that's something that is very dear to Rob and I's heart because we do have a child with additional needs and it does bring additional strains into our family. There have also been times when we've cared for relatives with chronic long-term illnesses. But, of course, for many people, they could be caring for somebody not necessarily in their home but having to go out of their home to spend a lot of time with somebody who needs additional care. And then, of course, fractured family relationships, not necessarily through relationship or marriage breakdown, but just in the way things are in the home. Things aren't always easy. So some of these things could be short-term, some of these could be long-term. How does our faith affect us? How do we show our faith in all of those circumstances, in whichever of those arrangements fits us? Now, Rob and I were both brought up in Christian families, quite different, but I think we were so blessed as children to have faith within our family as just a normal thing. It was always there. I remember going and staying with my grandma, who every morning would get up at 6 and go downstairs and read her Bible. Now, to me, this was a really weird thing. As a 6, 7, 8-year-old, why would my grandma get up early and go and read that? And then one day she astounded me and said, "Jacqueline, I have read the whole Bible." That was a wow moment for me, especially as a little one, thinking, all those tiny words, how on earth does she do it? All those skinny pages. But I was really in awe of her for doing that. Now, sadly, my grandma died when I was 17, and I didn't really have any opportunities to really ask her about her faith. But there was one time when I did say to her, "So what was that all about, Grandma?" I think I was probably about 11 or 12. And surprisingly, the church that she had been involved with for many, many, many years, she decided to leave. And everybody had thought this was a bit of a rumble. Why? Why was this going on? And I actually plucked up the courage and went to stay with her one weekend and said, "Grandma, why are you leaving that church?" And I'll always remember what she said. She said, "The Lord told me to." I'd never had anybody say that to me before. That was my first sort of wow moment experience of God actually telling somebody to do something. Now I've tuned my ears into what God asks and what God tells us, I'm better at doing those listening things. But as a child, that was quite a moment that stayed with me for a long, long time. So, thinking on that, who were the people that influenced you as you were growing up? How did you catch your faith? I've heard it said before that faith is not taught, it's caught. It's the people around you, the way that you interact with them, the things that they say to you, the things that influence you almost on a sort of subconscious level sometimes. What did you learn in your family or from the people who were important to you? I was listening to something on the radio a while ago, and I can't remember who the guy was who said it, but he said, "I realised that," I think that was a grandparent as well, "because it was important to Granny, it meant that the rest of us respected it because we realised it was of value to her. So we thought, there must be something in this." And of course, the big question, how do we pass this on? How do we do this? There's a nice picture of someone passing on the baton. So what does the Bible say? This is a well-known verse. I'm going to have to read it from up here because that's too small for me now. Proverbs 22, verse 6. "Start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it." And I think I probably was very blessed in that I was set off in the right way. There are times when I have turned away from my faith. I have actually come back to it. I think Rob's going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But very, very well known verse from Proverbs. And of course, the other one in Deuteronomy, I really like this one, Deuteronomy 6, which is shared by the Jewish traditions, part of the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. And it says, "These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." Now, that's an interesting bit, that bit about tying them on your wrists and on your foreheads. In the Jewish tradition, they have this, see if it's on there. They're called tefillin, and they're little boxes with pieces of scripture, because this comes just after the giving of the Ten Commandments. And they actually tie them on, in some parts of the Jewish faith, they still do this. They tie them on their wrists and a little box on their forehead. And it is a representation of this part in Deuteronomy. But it's quite distinctive in that it means tie them on your hands, that's your actions. So do these things as part of your action. This is the thinking part of your head. This is your executive function here at the front of your head. So this is, do everything that you're thinking, that you're doing, have those commandments close to them. Obviously, keep them in your heart. And sort of providing a bit of a backdrop to everything that you do, everywhere you go, everywhere you walk, having them in the front of your house. And I expect you probably have been in people's homes where they have something distinctive just inside the doorway of their house, perhaps a cross with a Bible verse on it, something like that. And that's really where that started to come from. So, how do we do this? I truly believe that if we put God at the centre and we're living out our faith in real ways within our family, that creates a culture in our homes. Now, I would say you can only do what fits with your family. Over the years, I've heard lots of people say, oh, yes, you should do this and you should do this and you should do that as Christian parents. Do you know what, Rob and I are not very good at doing Bible stories every night before bedtime. We're even worse at doing Bible notes. So that doesn't fit with our family. And there have been times when we felt perhaps a little bit guilty. We've bought the Bible study notes for the children. We might have done a couple of days, and then we haven't managed any more. So I put my hand up for that. We didn't manage that particularly well. But going back to what I said just a moment ago, if it's particularly important to us, then other people around us will start to realise this is important in this family. So there are other things that we start to do within our family that replace the Bible stories at bedtime. I'm not saying don't do them, because I think it's brilliant if you can. It just doesn't fit with the structure of our family. But we have shared in them when we have been visiting cousins and other family members who do that. And that's been great to be part of what they've done. And our children have really valued that. Right, Rob, I'm going to hand over to you. Oop. Joan, could you move it on, please? Thank you. And again. Okay.
One other thing that the Bible makes very plain when it comes to looking at faith in families is the fact that we are all adopted into God's wider family. I do tend to think that society in this country and throughout the Western world, actually, in the 21st century, has become very insular. There's an awful lot of sort of talk about what we want as individuals, but also it can become very insular within specific families. So you see a lot of advertising that's sort of focused on what are you and your family want, what's going to make your life easier. When in reality, the Bible speaks very plainly that although obviously individual families are important, We are all adopted into God's wider family through faith in Jesus Christ. Joan, if you could bring up the next one for me. And the next one. And the next one. And the next one. All right, here we go. Marilyn very wonderfully read to us this morning this marvellous passage from Romans 8. Joan, so if I could have the words up. Thank you. That speaks of the fact of how we are all adopted into God's family. So when we are looking at doing faith in family, we are not on our own. First and foremost, obviously, and I'm going to speak a bit more about this in a moment, we are supported in so many ways by God, our Heavenly Father. But also, we are here as the church family to support one another. We are never alone as we seek to be Christians in our family. We always have the support of our wider church in all the challenges that we face as Christians in a family. And one of the particular challenges, Joan, if I could have the next slide, thank you, that I think that we do often face is, what happens if not everyone in our immediate family shares our faith? And I think this is applicable for many Christians and many people here today. So it's a very real issue. It may be that our husbands or wives don't share our faith. It may be that one or more of our children doesn't, or our brothers and sisters. And this can be a very challenging thing because it can create tensions within a family. We love our families very much. They are very dear to us. But then our Christian faith is the most critical thing in our lives. Now, it could be that those people in our family who don't share our faith are very supportive of our faith, which is fantastic. But the tension can still manifest itself sometimes in practical ways. I don't know about you guys, but it seems to me that family life gets busier every year. I mean, my children's social life is more demanding than mine is, quite frankly. But there always seems to be so much pressure on time, doesn't there? Particularly at weekends. And there may be situations where there's something very important to us going on in church at a weekend, and we want to be there, and yet we're also conscious of the fact that our partner wants to go and see a close family member, hasn't seen them for some time, wants the whole family to go. What do you do? We might often find ourselves in a situation where we are less able to come along to church events, church services, life groups, etc., because we're conscious that we're leaving our families at home, or at least part of them. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm one of those people that if I'm torn between doing two things, I always end up feeling guilty no matter which I choose. So if I do activity A, I always think I should be doing activity B. And if I do activity B, I always think I should be doing activity A. We just end up, when we're in church, thinking that we should be spending more time with our family. And when we're spending time with our family because they can't come along to us to church, we feel that we should be doing church. It's a challenge. There may also be occasions where the people in our family who don't share our faith are quite oppositional to what we believe in. A very, very dear auntie of mine, my auntie Edna, was married to my uncle Ken for 60 years. And all that time, he disagreed with what she believed in. And he was, by some distance, the most argumentative man that I have ever met. And maybe argument is possibly the wrong word, because an argument implies that someone saying something and someone saying something back, he never let you say anything back. And all the time that I knew him, he would constantly snipe at Christianity. He would take issue with things. And it would sometimes be my auntie who bore the brunt. Sometimes it would be other family members. He once memorably told me that I was a brainwasher because I taught in Sunday school. And it really was very, very intense. And I think I have no idea, well, I do, and I'll come on to that in a moment, but how my auntie survived through that experience, because I knew one of the hardest things for her was that he was very resistant to their children being brought up in the Christian faith. And I know she found that particularly difficult to deal with. In whatever situation we find ourselves in, I think we want to be able to be in a position where we're sharing our faith with our family members. We want them to come to know Jesus because he's such a wonderful thing in our lives. We want them to know that too. And that's where, in that wonderful old phrase, the rubber really hits the road, because quite frankly, that is incredibly difficult because they know us. In most cases, we live with them. They see us when we're grumpy in the mornings. I'm not really thinking about myself there. But they see you when you come home from work and you just feel rotten about something and you spend half an hour moaning about it. They see you when you're not feeling well. They see you in all of those moments. And it's those moments where they go, this Christianity thing, not up to much, is it? Because you're miserable all the time. Or something along those lines. Now, I'm conscious I've got very little time here, and it's very easy to give simple solutions. And there are no simple solutions. The Bible never promises any simple solutions. But I just feel that the Lord has a few words of encouragement for us today. The first thing, most importantly, is that God has placed us in the families that we are in. We are not in those families by accident. You are placed nowhere by accident. It is God's plan for you and for me. And as much as we love the people in our families and as much as we want them to come to share our faith, God wants that a million times more. He is desperate for these people to come to know him because he loves them so much. He died for them on the cross. And he's chosen us because who better to put in those families than someone who loves them so much? The second thing I think that's important is for us to realise is that it is not our job to convert people and bring people to know Jesus. It is God's job. That is his mission. As Jeremy so wonderfully put it recently, we do what we can do, and we let God do what only he can do. He has called us into our families to be Jesus in those families, to be a signpost. And I think Jacqueline's going to talk a bit more about that in a moment, and point the way to Jesus. God will do the rest. And we need to remember that he is with us all the time, that he is working through us. For those of us who were here last week, the bishop spoke about the passage in the first chapter of Philippians, where Paul spoke about God starting a work in us and then continuing it to completion. When we're in those families, when we're struggling in these situations, when we don't know what to say, God is right there. Never forget that. He is there in the kitchen. He's there in the bathroom. He's there when there's arguments going on in the living room. He is right there with us all the time. And the final thing I would say, and this comes back to what the bishop said last week, it's about persevering. It's about keeping on, keeping on. And it is hard. It is difficult. But God calls us to keep on being Jesus. I mentioned that my auntie was married to my uncle for 60 years, and she still didn't get a medal. And I have, like I said, the most incredible admiration for her, because she was, by some distance, the most devout and dedicated person I think I've ever met. Because no matter how cantankerous my uncle was, no matter how argumentative he was and oppositional he was, she just kept on being Jesus in that family. Now, she sadly died 7 years ago, and my uncle sadly died a month ago, and I would love to stand here in front of you and say that before he died, I know that he gave his life to Jesus. But the honest answer is, I don't know. That is between God and him. But after my auntie died, my uncle admitted openly that despite all his opposition, he had the most tremendous respect for her and how she had been a Christian in that family, because he could see that it was real to her. Moreover, he openly said to me that when she died, obviously she left a huge hole in the home and in his life. But he said to me, he said, it was more than that. It was like something else had gone from the house. It was like a real presence had departed that he couldn't put into words. Now, I think we can put that into words. It was Jesus. Now, obviously, Jesus is always with us. But Jesus was so real in my auntie's life that he was a real presence because of her in the home. And my uncle became much more open and explorative of the Christian faith from that point on. So we don't know, because it's all in God's hands. But God calls us in those situations where our loved ones don't share our faith to be Jesus in our homes and our families. He is with us, he will strengthen us, and he calls us to keep on keeping on.
Thanks, Rob. Okay, so let's have a think about what makes us distinctive to any other family. I don't know if the clicker's going to work. Let's try. No, I'll just nod, shall I, Joan? Okay, so we need to make sure that we have our principles and values of our Christian faith are right there, and we're going to express them in whatever ways we can. And one of the best ways, I think, is through the fruits of the Spirit being at the heart of our family life. So those are in Galatians 5:22-23. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And when Rob and I were having a think about this the other day in our kitchen, sitting at the kitchen table with a cup of tea, don't be fooled. It was in the midst of the kitchen chaos and the clutter and the washing up and the washing. We began to think about what is it that is almost like wallpaper of our family life. And we thought perhaps it's more like a backdrop on a stage, which I guess was no surprise because we've both trod the boards in the past. So we were thinking, yes, actually our Christian faith is that backdrop. So what is on the backdrop of our family life? What are the things that are there that are almost tangible? And these are the things that we came up with. So we often have music in our house. In fact, I'd say there was always music somewhere in our house happening. So what's the Christian music that might be there? At the moment, we've got the Wren Collective in the car. And the children have enjoyed various kids' worship stuff as well as more of the adult stuff as well as they've got older. There are some bits of Christian art in our home. We do have a cross with a Bible verse on it. Not that one, but similar. One of the children's got one of those Guatemalan crosses in their bedroom as well. We have some beautiful artwork on the wall. That's a particular one by Hannah Dummett, I think her name is, which is, you can't see it on there, but it's actually got some scripture actually written all the way through the whole picture, which is really beautiful. A whole variety of those. She does have a website. Some of you may have Holman Hunt, Light of the World picture, very famous one. I have got that poster. It's not up at the moment, but it's there somewhere at home. And we also have a prayer cube with different graces on it as well. Okay. What are the books that are around? Obviously, Bibles need to change as children get older. So we started off with the big Bible storybook from Scripture Union. And we moved on to the Lion Storyteller Bible, which provides the basis for Open the Book assemblies in schools. The Good News Bible. And then moving on to the Youth Bibles. And then onto the message. As I think we've probably got a huge collection of Bibles at home. I expect many of you have too. Different one for different reasons. And, of course, the Bible study notes, which we haven't done terribly well at. So what else do we do? What else are the adults reading? What else is around in the house? So I've just put up some examples. There's things like God on Mute by Pete Gregg. There's the Max Lucado books. They all tend to be just around. The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman. That's got an interesting website as well. Jeff Lucas books, very funny. Lucas on Life. We have the Christianity magazine delivered once a month. And, of course, there's the great world of apps as well now, aren't there, which youngsters love to use on their phones or on mum and dad's phones. We've used VeggieTales in the past. Friends and Heroes, DVD series, really exciting cartoon series with Bible stories at the heart of it. Guardians of Ancora app. I don't know if any of you or your grandchildren or children have come across this. This is great. This is getting into the world of the Bible and discovering in the virtual world. Obviously, the NIV Bible reading app as well is definitely on Dad's phone. My phone's not that advanced. Okay, so moving on. Things we've tried to involve our children in, Christian holidays and conferences, being part of something bigger, particularly when we were involved in smaller churches. It's really important for the children to realise that there was more Christians there meeting together. So Spring Harvest has definitely been on our annual calendar as a big event that we all look forward to. Every summer I take the children to Pilgrim Hall in East Sussex, which is owned by CWR. If you want to know more about that, let me know. There's all sorts of holidays going on for retired people. Family holiday happens in the middle of the summer, and this year I'm hosting it, so I'm really looking forward to that. Obviously, those are a greater cost because it's like a hotel holiday, really, but really good quality stuff and great interactions with other Christians. And we also, obviously, there's the slightly cheaper options, the camping options like New Wine, Detling Bible Week, Soul Survivor. And have you ever considered going and having a look around things like the Big Church Day Out? That's somewhere on the M23 in May. Or even going to something like the Christian Resources Exhibition to find other things that you might want to use within your families. And obviously, discussions and opinions in our homes. What underpins those? And thinking about this, what is the message into our children and young people? What does the world tell them about their Christian faith? What are they hearing on the radio, on the TV? What are they seeing on the internet? What's in magazines? What does Richard Dawkins tell them? And what are the opinions of their peer group around them? So what's the message in? What's coming into them? And actually, how do we need to express our message out to them about our faith towards them? Go on to the next bit, Jane. Thank you. So what will they learn from us in our families, about us personally, and about our other family members who share our faith? There's another one there. Okay. Right, next one. And also showing that we have compassionate hearts. These are some of the charities that are very close to us. So things like the Compassion Charity. We sponsor a child in Ghana. Home for Good, a Christian charity that supports fostering and adoption. Care for the Family. And the Oasis Trust. There's just things that are around in our house all the time. We don't necessarily always talk about those, but they're just there. Okay. And our habits and routines within our family, things that we try and just structure our family life around. So we try and be at church as regularly as we can and participate in church activities. We take turns to say grace at mealtimes, particularly at the weekends when we're all together. Bedtime prayers is something that we establish when the children are quite little. As they've got older, they tend to do it more themselves. But while they're little, we're still doing it with them. And celebrating those big events, but putting a big Christian emphasis in. So Christmas obviously is great, tinsel and sparkle and lights, but trying to bring it down to that Christmas message as well, making sure that really is the heart of what we're doing, and all the others, Pancake Day, Easter, Harvest, and the Light Party. Okay. But I think, finally, what I would say, going back to that backdrop, if our Christian family life is going to be a bit like on the stage, what we do and what we believe is going to be our backdrop. We're going to have God at the centre, right in the main beam, and we're going to try and engage our audience as much as we can, being the people in our family. And if God is with us, who can be against us?